Hi, this is Claudia Gray, and you're listening to Don't Burn the Sacred Text.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is the story of Star Wars. You can read along with me in your book.
O is for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
All rebel fighters met at fleet headquarters to plan their attack. Princess Leia addressed them.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No, I am your father.
Hello, I am C-3PO, and you are about to listen to the story of Star.
Another chapter is here. Welcome to Don't Burn the Sacred Text. I am one of your hosts, Brandon, and we have a cast of characters for you tonight as we are discussing the Star Wars Visions novel, Ronin. So with me to do that is, he's my friend and yours, the Visions aficionado. He's part mindless philosopher, part malfunctioning little twerp. He's the Drew Brett.
That was pretty good. I'm impressed. I'm excited to be here, mostly. I'm also slightly concerned.
As you should be, because I brought backup tonight to talk about this book. We have one other addition to our collection. She is my friend and soon to be yours, and one of our most ardent supporters. Welcome Amanda Curtis to the show.
Well, thanks. Hey. I didn't realize I was such a strong supporter.
I mean,
that's good news.
Yeah.
I'm honored.
maybe the scale is just really low. That might be the bar is right. No, so
you just need a backup. That's all.
Exactly. And Amanda and I became friends on the Star Wars Clashing Sabers group, and we started having some discussions about this book. And then I was like, you know what? Wait, let's do this on the show. And alas, months later. Here we are. So thank you for joining us, Amanda. Before we jump into our ratings for Ronin, I want to take a minute and talk about another book. Also, not the Book of Boba Fett. We're talking about that over on Sith Talk, so stay tuned for more there. No, I want to talk about our Star Wars books that we're putting into classrooms through our fundraising raffle, where you can win signed books, collectibles, along with some amazing art prints by our friend Roberto Venegas. So right now, we stand at less than $800 to reaching our $2,000 goal. So we're at about $1,200.
That's so cool.
It's really amazing. And we've had such a good response to it, and so many people who are being amazing and help spreading the word, that we are extending it through Martin Luther King Day, so through January 17th. And you can get in on this for literally as little as $10, which is less than the cost of a single item in the raffle. So that's pretty cool. We've got signed books, we have art prints, signed memorabilia. So this is definitely something that you are going to want in your collection. If you're listening to this, everything in here you're going to like. We have I want to say almost double the prizes that we had last year, just off the top of my head.
That's amazing.
And so we are pushing for that $2,000 mark. So to kind of put it into context, right now at like about the $1,000 mark that we've hit, that's about 300 books into classrooms. And so 2,000 would put us at about 600 books or more into the classrooms. So literally every dollar counts. And if you're listening, obviously, to this show, you like Star Wars, you like Star Wars books, and you've had one that has impacted you. So let's pay that forward. And you can do so with the link that is in the show notes, or go to go.rallyup.com/revengeoftheReader. So
nice. Do you feel like you've got a nice list of teachers we can send things to, or are you still soliciting recipients?
I've got one sitting in my email that'll be getting books, and then we will be reaching out for more as soon as we have that. So I've already started collecting some of the books that we're going to be sending out, and I've got them in my closet. And right now, seems like the bookstores have been able to replenish, and I've got a range. Just sitting right now of literally everything up through at least upper middle school into high school. And if we get some high school teachers, I can definitely go get some high school books too. And like I said, we're going to be able to do a lot of really good stuff with this. And I know I've talked about it before, but as we were kind of coming up with this idea Just for me personally, I thought back to when I did had gotten a book of Star, a box of Star Wars books for my kids, and just the level of excitement that they had around reading in general once those books came, and just knowing that other people cared about them was really impactful for me and really impactful for those kids. So we appreciate anything you can do to help there.
Absolutely. That's so exciting.
That's actually how we met.
Yes, it is.
Really?
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a box of books?
I did get a box of books. I'm about to roll them out next week.
Yeah.
It's living proof. This is too scary. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this anymore.
Well, and
I feel unreasonable amounts of pressure now.
Well, and Amanda, you teach, you work with deaf students, right? So
I do.
We're able through this to reach out to all kinds of different different students. So, you know, everything from lower elementary up through high school, like I said, we've worked with autistic classrooms, special ed classrooms, inclusion teachers, all kinds of different stuff.
Do you know, off the top of your head, you may not, if there's like foreign language copies we can get of stuff, if there's like a Spanish class that needs extra textbooks or something? Not textbooks, but...
Where there is a will, there is a way.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Let's just put it that way. I mean, I know you guys on the show know this, and most of you listening probably know this too, but... You know, this is, I really love what we're doing with this, and it's really become a focus of, you know, my passion project here, Clashing Sabers. So where there is a will, there is a way, and I will figure that's it awesome. Out if that's somebody who gets nominated. So you can do that over at clashingsabers.net and just go to nominate a teacher, and it'll get sent to me. And honestly, if they get nominated, they get books. It's just a matter of whether
it's not a competition.
Definitely not a competition. It's just a matter of whether we have the books at that time that I can send out pretty quickly, or you know, getting those books to them, or in the case of Amanda, waiting a couple of months until we could finally meet in person because we live 45 minutes away from each other, and yet we still could never make it work because the plague. But we're here.
That and teaching's crazy right now. So, along with many other professions, but
it is absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. But let's move forward and let's get into this book. And before we talk about the book proper, we're going to give a pre-discussion rating so we can then at the end see if our ratings have changed at all, which, knowing how diametrically opposed we are going to be on this book, should be a very interesting conversation. So, in honor of Ronan, we're going to use kyber crystals this time. So, Drew, on a scale of 1 to 5, how many kyber crystals do you give Ronan?
Wow. I'm going to go 4.8.
Whoa.
Tell you now, I have decided this is my favorite book of the new canon.
It is not canon, though.
Well, okay. This is my favorite book of the Disney era.
Fair. I just wanted to clarify for readers, because I think I think it's important based on the idea, or not necessarily the ideas, but the way that this story is told and the execution.
That's a good point. It's just so good.
Amanda?
I'll bump it up a tad to 2.5. Maybe.
Okay. Middle of the road.
Well, a little lower, maybe.
But. I guess I get to be the negative Nancy here. I'm giving this a 0 kyber crystals.
What? You find nothing redemptive about this story?
No.
Wow. Right, here we go.
Again, like, it can't get lower, so I'm very much hoping that this conversation raises this level. And again, like, this is our opinions, and we are not bashing the book or the author or the work that they put in to creating this book and creating this world. For me, as we'll get into it, it did not work. For me, and this is kind of to put it into perspective, the kind of joke that I came up with is I would rather I would read Thrawn books for the rest of my life before I would pick this book up again.
Oh my gosh, that's you're a horrible person.
So again, like, I'm very hyperbolic as a human being. It's my nature, as most of you know. But here's my thing. We can go ahead and get into this. One, it took me 4 months to get through. It felt like it was never ending. I'm pretty sure that I started the book before coronavirus was a thing.
Oh, and come on.
I'm kidding.
And I both know that's not true.
No, very much not true. But the biggest issue that I had is that I did not feel invested in the world because the lived-in value that you get in, like, A New Hope, I think, was extremely overplayed. I think that hand was played way too much to where the ideas of what particular things were not clear. It wasn't clear really what the Empire was. It wasn't really clear what the Jedi or the Sith were. And that's fine if you want to change the narrative around those, but we weren't given enough grounding in what those were or what the conflict was there, that it's not like you could just throw it away. It's not like where, you know, Obi-Wan mentioning Clone Wars and it's like, oh, cool, I wonder what the Clone Wars is. It's literally, I don't know what's happening in the world. I don't know what's happening in the galaxy. And that made it hard to get invested in at the start. And I hoped going through it would change that and we would get more revealed. But essentially, I feel like we didn't really get enough to make me understand the dynamics. And so because I didn't understand the dynamics of the world that was built, I didn't care about the characters living in it.
I feel like it would have benefited greatly from a prologue, you know, like an opening crawl, something that, you know, is so totally uncommon to Star Wars, but something to set the scene.
So you guys don't feel like by the end of the story you got the full picture of the galaxy in motion?
I wanted it before the end. I spent at least half the book pretty confused. And that took away... If it wasn't using that same terminology, the same kind of presumed schema, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot. I really enjoy fantasy as a whole, and it really played out like that. But without that grounding that you talked about and just an understanding of the world, I was lost for way too much of the book. By the time I figured it out, it was almost too late.
Yeah, that's it was a... I call it like the Pulp Fiction effect, where you watch most of Pulp Fiction and you don't really understand what's going on, but at the end it all becomes so like blatantly clear. You can go back and rewatch it and be like, oh, that's what was happening. Okay, I see that. That makes sense now. I don't feel like I could go back and make any more sense of it than I did as I was reading it.
Yeah, it's not so much that, like, or even like Arrival, I think, is a really good example of that, where only when you figure out exactly what's happening in the film does the rest of the film actually make sense. It's more like I kept getting the vibe of Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which I don't know if you guys have read or seen. It's a post-apocalyptic story, but the problem is there's two characters, there's a father and son, and they are never named in the book. So you're following along, and there's reasons for that, but and you never learn actually what happened, like the sequence of events that led up to the destruction of civilization, because the story's not about that. Like, by and large, it doesn't matter what the rest of the world has happened, or has happened to the rest of the world, rather. And it's similar in this one, where, like, there's things happening outside of these main characters, but honestly, the story's about these guys. And I think we do get enough nuggets about what's happening in the galaxy at large, and especially with some of the antagonists towards the middle section of the book, that really helped fill in the gaps there. But I understand your concerns about the way the terminology is used and changed, but I loved that. Especially the way in which the Force is described. It's wildly different than the rest of the Star Wars universe. And that was early enough on in the book to really set that ground to say, hey, look, I'm going to use a lot of the same words, but they're not going to mean the same thing. And you're going to just come along for the ride. And it just was so much fun for me to do that.
But my question is, why? Like, why do we need to use those same terms? Like, I think about like the Old Republic books, right? And they talk about the empire, but they make it clear that this is a different empire, and they give mm-hmm. you a foundation in here's like the ruling class, here's the, you know, the dynamics of how this empire works, so that you know, okay, this is how this is working. That's different than, you know, the Sith Empire has an emperor, but then it's got a ruling council and stuff like that, which is different than the empire that we have in the films, right? So it gives you enough of a foundation. I legitimately don't know who was the good guys. I don't know what the relationship with the Jedi and the Empire point. Is.
That is the whole reason for that ambiguity, where they're not good guys and bad guys. They're all just have lost their way. The Jedi Order in Ronin are not good people. Like, that is made abundantly clear once you have all the puzzle pieces of the story put together. And that was one of the Ronin's main motivating factors, is that the Jedi had lost their way. And so he abandons the Order and he joins the Sith. The Sith culture, I'm not sure. Let me see. Where's my notes on this? But he joins the opposing side. But it's not like the problem is it balances around how the Force works in this. And it's not just the light side is good and the dark side is evil. As I've harped on many, many times, it's not where the light side of the Force and balance means health, and the dark side is like cancer. It's not, it doesn't function like that. And that is established very early on when it talks about the black current and the white flare as the two sides of the Force. And that resets our understanding while keeping some of the terminology. So we are slightly aware of how things work, but we are clued in that things are not exactly the way that they seem. And what that should do to us as readers, it should clue us in when we see something that we recognize, we cannot take it for granted it means the exact same thing. So it forces us to focus in on those things and say, okay, I understand what that used to mean, but I need you to teach me the new definition of this term. That made it interesting and exciting and new and different. I mean, in a world where so many different things could never happen in the traditional Star Wars universe. Like, it's just a sandbox of playtime, and it's so exciting to see how different things worked in that and the way in which it's put together. You know, like you said, we've got the Jedi, we've got the Empire, but they're not what they used to mean. We've got the Jedi and the Sith, but that's not what it was before. But lightsabers work relatively the same, which is pretty cool. And there's also the mention of the Dark Lord of the Sith, which is a title for a single individual rather than, you know, Anakin Skywalker, which I thought was really cool. And it's only used once, way at the end.
When I started reading it, I was really trying to put the Empire, the Jedi, and the Sith into the boxes that I already know.
Right.
And it was, and I didn't, maybe I'm just obtuse, but I didn't catch the, I caught that the Force was different, but not that it was supposed to clean the slate, per se. And maybe with all the fantasy in general that I read, I was looking for the good guy and the bad guy.
Yeah,
and when I couldn't find it, I got really frustrated.
I think that's absolutely purposeful. Like, I think that is definitely the intention of the author to say, hey, look, we've been living in this world of black and white since 1977, but we've got a chance to tell a different style of story. And really, it has to do with what the story is based on. Like, it comes from, you know, obviously the whole book comes from and retells the story of the duel episode from Visions, you know, that first one, the mostly black and white. And that episode, being based on like the Kurosawa works and the Jidai Geki era and whatnot, comes along with its certain cultural baggage, where people inside that context are very anxious about violence and the scars that it leaves on people. Like, it's a very protective type of environment where the characters in those kinds of stories all behave a certain way because they're playing kind of like roles in it. You know, if you think about like a film noir story, you know that there's going to be, you know, the down on his luck gumshoe detective. There's going to be a femme fatale. There's going to be all these, you know, character tropes. And this is kind of the same thing where these people are questioning underlying presuppositions. And that's something that the author wants the reader to do at the same time. And it's tough because it's not a normal thing for this audience to do.
I did feel like if I had a crash course in Japanese history, then I might have fared better.
I completely agree. If more people had, like, I came into it with what I would consider very rudimentary understanding of, you know, culture and history and language of how it works. And it plays with some of those things in such fun and exciting ways. And so the more we kind of dissect those elements, if you can understand and see that a lot of these things are on purpose and it's not careless, then you can start to appreciate it in a way that maybe wasn't available to you the first time through.
I guess my thing is, I don't feel like we ever got enough of a definition of any of them to really formulate. Like, it didn't feel...
When you say any of them, what are you talking about?
Of those terms that,
okay.
We were repurposing, right? We got these allusions to, you know, the Jedi and lords and things like that. And I'm cool with, like, redefining what those are, but you have to give a clear enough delineation of... I don't know where the line is, right? So I don't know, because I don't know where the line is, I don't know when somebody's crossed the line. I don't know what side of the line anybody's on. So I don't know if I'm supposed to be reading this character as somebody who is on a redemption path, as somebody who's falling down. Like when you look at the names in this one just absolutely killed me. I could not keep track of it.
I will help you.
Woman that Ronan kills in the duel.
Koru,
thank you. Like, Koru, I felt like, okay, we're going on that path of her getting this fresh start and redefining her life and things like that. And I will say, like, if I were to get invested in one of the characters, she would have been the one that I was the most invested in. I think her story was the most intriguing, you know, relative to the rest of the characters, but I don't feel like we ever really got to an end of that story. And I
really?
Here's why I don't feel like we got to the end of it. We didn't get a build up enough of it. Because you add in all of these ancillary characters and it distracts from the Ronin and Koru. I think if we had just had Ronin and Koru, maybe we get an interesting story. But especially making the Traveler one of the main characters.
Oh.
No, hold on. Listen to me.
I'm a fan, so go ahead.
I think that that works. I think that that character works. And I think that that dynamic that you set up of this Jedi, you know, who's more or less fallen, works, and you bring in his master and all of that stuff, it works for the story and it works for what you're doing with Ronin. But then when you bring Koru in also, it's just too much. And because it's too much, you don't get enough of any of them. If we were doing this and this was if I knew we were getting a trilogy of these characters and okay, this is the setup book, like Alphabet Squadron, you know, that first one is the setup book. And my complaint there was I didn't really feel super invested in any individual character. And so I didn't feel invested in the group as a whole. But I knew we had more coming there. So once I found some things to dig in there and look for in future books, okay, cool. I have a reason to go forward. I have no reason to go forward on this because this is a self-contained story and it's done at the end.
This is kind of like the Last Jedi of the films, right? Where it's just so different from everything we've come before. We have to put so many of our common analytical associations on a shelf and understand it from a different point of view. There are less arcs for these characters, but that's because they're all asking the same kind of questions and demonstrating different ways of answering it. They all have questions about how do they deal with their past trauma and allowing it to impact their futures. You know, the Ronin has so many, you know, so much in his past, and he struggles to deal with it. And he handles it in one way. Koru deals it with another way. The Traveler deals with it in another way. And it's all, the book is not making a judgment call on whose way is proper, right, or wrong. It's demonstrating options and allowing the reader to determine what is most appropriate given the situations. Some of them make good decisions. Some of them make bad decisions. Our hero, like the main character, makes terrible decisions. It's one of the reasons he's so much fun. So it's not that the character has an arc to go where Koru starts in one spot and ends in a wildly different spot. Although I think she does. It's that the focus of the reason Koru is included in the story is to give us a different perspective on the same issue that everybody is dealing with. You know, betrayal, pain, and loss. Like, everybody's dealing with those same things. And they all go about handling it or not handling it, as the case may be, in those different ways.
I still wanted someone to root for, and I felt like I couldn't. Maybe that's simplistic. And I like an anti-hero, and I like gray characters, but there was something.
How did you feel about
this.
The Traveler then? What's your opinion on the Traveler?
That's a good question. Like you said, this is hard.
It's very tough, and I love it.
I think my favorite was Koru, however you're pronouncing it. I did feel a bit of an arc with her. I will say that. I'm not sure I was rooting for her per se, but I liked her character.
There you go. Okay.
The Traveler. Okay, I'm gonna. I debated about whether or not to say this because I don't want to jump into controversial waters. And I want to start out by saying representation is very important. Okay. But the pronoun usage was very difficult for me. I'm not used to reading the they and the them pronouns for a singular person.
Okay.
And I actually kind of went back through the book and reread parts of it more than I actually meant to reread and liked it better on the reread. And I think part of that was I had a grip on those pronouns and could understand the character better. But by then, maybe my views were kind of set already. It wasn't that I struggled with the non-binary part of the character. I just struggled to know when they were talking about who and how many people were involved. And maybe I just need to read more books that have characters like that and understand it better.
Oh, no, I think that's valid. And I think one thing, and for those of you that don't know, the author of the book is non-binary and uses the they/them pronouns. So obviously, that's, you know, to me that pointed at, okay, this is the most important character for them, right? Because it seems to be, and this is literally going just off of a basis of literally their biography in the back of the book, but in a world where that representation doesn't exist, if they're putting that in there, they're not like choosing that character lightly. Right. And I do think the Traveler was the character that everything kind of circled around. Right.
Interesting.
And so like, I think I went in expecting it for it to be the Ronin, but to go to what Amanda was saying, there were times, especially when we're jumping between fights in the fight scenes, which the action scenes just absolutely lost me, but we can come back to that later.
What?
The they, them usage became more difficult to understand. So I think that says multiple things. One, it says we need to be including more, you know, non-binary characters into our stories so that this becomes more normalized and we as readers get used to reading it. But two, I think that the actual prose and writing of this book, not the story, not the anything else, not the character development, just the prose and the way that they write this book is one of the most intriguing.
Careful.
No. this is one. It's one of the most intriguing and well written books of at least 2021. I will give it
Thank you. There are so many passages I just copied the text out of because the conversations were just so brilliant and so wonderful. Some of them are light and fun and still well done. Like there's a moment where the Ronin asks the Traveler what he should call them. And the Traveler says, you can really call me whatever you want. And Ronin responds with, that's a lot of freedom. And the Traveler responds, then I'll trust you to exercise it wisely. Holy cow. Like, that's brilliant. Like, that's some really interesting things. Like, the level of trust between two characters who do not know each other, the wisdom it takes, and, like, the exercise of freedom and how they address one another. Like, the personal relationships and interactions between all of the characters is done with such care and such, like, economy, I think, in a way that makes it, to me... I'll grant you a little bit that it's tough if we're not familiar as a reader with the different backgrounds and perspectives and there's another word I want to throw in there but I can't think of it at the moment, but who these characters are, and if we're not familiar with who they are, it can be difficult to follow because every single one of these characters represents something completely different. Evidently, there's text in here that supports the Ronin is pansexual. I must have blinked and missed it. I don't understand. I didn't catch that, but that's okay. And I'll tell you, there's a scene where the Traveler's former master, Hanrai, uses the Traveler's dead name, and it made me so angry.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting that response, but I think because I had gotten used to the Traveler and I really appreciated that character. Like all the character, you know, the Traveler responds with just like a flinch of like, ah, oh, that kind of hurts when you say that. And I was like, how dare he say that? I was like, I got so offended on it, on the Traveler's behalf. It was crazy. I've never had that kind of reaction to a character in a story like that. I was just wild. And I could only give that, the props to the writing to get us there, to get me there.
It was so good.
So, yeah. Drew, can I assume that the Traveler was your favorite character of the book?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think so. The Traveler's certainly the most interesting to me. I liked the persona that they adopt as like the Kitsune, the fox spirit, which again, if you recognize that, you can associate certain elements from Japanese culture to it. That trickster, the playful... It's not necessarily harmless, but it's never malicious. There's this not spiritual aspect in a sense of like divine or religious, but a spirit aspect where the character is more spirit than they are physical. They're essentially ageless and genderless and you know, self-conforming identity free. And that is reflected, again, like we talked about, in the way in which the pronouns are used, where we use they, them, because they don't fit into that binary category, and because it's reflective of the characteristics as well. Like, they embody this simultaneous detachment from convention, but also an investment in the personal relationships among the characters. The Traveler is easily... the most connected to all the other characters. Like the Traveler can build those relationships and is able to invest in other people more than any other character. And so I think the Traveler is certainly the most interesting to me, though I do love the Ronin. And I'm presuming if we're listening to this conversation, we don't need to worry about spoilers because hopefully you made it to the end. Or if you didn't, you're not interested in it to the end.
It took me long enough.
I don't understand that, but okay. But the relationship between Ronin and Mirahi at the end was heartbreakingly interesting. It was just fascinating to see how that was done.
That's what gives it a 2.5 over a 2 for me, was the very end.
Okay.
Oh, the stuff at the temple.
Isn't that just amazing?
It's fantasy. It's everything I love about fantasy.
That's so great. I love the way it's structured too. Like one of the things I was looking back through the author's descriptions and tweets about kind of their process, and they took some real time in describing some interesting elements of it. And evidently, each planetary setting is set within a specific season. So the book opens with the duel episode, which is basically the beginning of springtime. You know, the Ronin notes the crisp air leaving and people are starting to come out and farm again. When they go to the next planet, it's the summertime and the whole planet is revelry and kind of, you know, basically if they turn the planet of Jeddah into a tourist attraction, that's the second sequence. The third area where they're focused mainly on the starships, the Jedi ship that Hanrai commands is imitating autumn. Like his garden is set to imitate autumn, which again tells us something about the nature of the character, where they're not interested in the actual real autumn of a place, but they're perfectly content with faking it. Like they're not in it for the reality of it, but rather the imitation of it, which I thought was fascinating. And then the last planet, the Areatsu, is wintertime. It's cold, it's dead, it's a little scary, it's always darkness. Oh, it's so good.
See, that's interesting to me because just from a basic storytelling standpoint, you would figure they would start with like winter and then move to spring or summer, right? So you start at the death and you go through to the rebirth.
Maybe. I mean, traditional Star Wars might, but again, this ain't.
Well, that's what I was going to say is maybe that was part of the flipping it on its head. Was there anything in those tweets that made it seem like that was an intentional, you know, to reset how we kind of think about the story and the dynamics?
Not necessarily in order to rethink things and like subvert expectations like Rian Johnson would do. More so, it's intended to give a written description of a visual cue. So instead of having, you know, the scene take place, I'm trying to think of an example from the films. The films are pretty season free because they're all one environment all of the time. But in fact, I can't think of a single planet we see more than once in different seasons. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Except for maybe Tatooine, we see in like whatever the harvest season means, and then whatever non-harvest season.
Water is. I don't know.
And your whole planet is one environment. It's kind of hard.
It's really difficult, but maybe the best example is Empire Strikes Back, which starts in the snowy plains of Hoth, and moves to the dark swamps of Dagobah, and ends in the bright, the twilight hour of Bespin and Cloud City. Like there are visual cues that tell us certain things. Like, you know, when you get to Cloud City, there's dark reds and oranges and whatnot. And we kind of like would associate that with an impending sense of doom. And then that's covered up in the morning when everybody wakes up, they go to breakfast. It's bright, it's clean. You know, the sun is shining, the clouds are puffy white. And then there's Vader. Like there's a subversion there based on the environment as well. So the use of seasons in Ronin is not so much like, hey, I'm going to change the way you look at visual cues, but rather here's a way I'm going to let you keep track of what's going on and when and where we are. You know, it's imagine a play, right? Where you don't have a fully developed visual picture of where you are. You have, you know, a desk with a lamp on it, which tells you it's night. You know, you have a window that's open, which tells you it's, you know, warm outside. Small things like that, which help allow the reader to build the rest of the world around them and allows you to kind of participate in that. You know, the author says that they are not particularly good at visual cues. And so this was one way that they were trying to replicate some of that information that we use in the Star Wars movies and put it into the written word.
Okay. I mean, I think
all I'm doing is trying to get you out of that zero star basement level rating. You know?
It can't go lower. No, I find that intriguing, you know, and like the intent, like as somebody who, you know, I spend time teaching my students about, you know, the seasons being visual cues for things that are mm-hmm. going to happen. I find that, you know, pretty interesting and compelling. I think maybe this is just because I was reading it and was, like I said, not invested in the world because everything was so different and unexplained that I didn't really pick up on that while I was reading, because I was just trying to keep up with who the hell everybody was and what everybody was doing and how they all interacted and stuff like that. And so, like, I asked earlier about, you know, was the Traveler your favorite character? Because he, you know, he would have, or they would have been mine. But the Ronin, who the book is named after,
yep,
literally couldn't care less.
Well, I think that's okay. Yeah. I think that's all right. He's not a likable person. Like,
no.
Do you know his code name was when they were writing, since they didn't give him an actual name?
What?
Ooh, what's that?
He was referred to as Darth Uh-oh.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really know what that means, but hey, I just thought it was fascinating. It's like, all right, sure, why not? He's just a big, dark, scary, messed up kind of dude.
Well, but see, then when we get to the end of the book, and the payoff is, you know, with him, it doesn't hit for me. Because
it didn't hit for you?
I've spent 300 pages not caring about the character. So why?
Oh, now come on. Well, okay, when you say not caring about the character, are you talking about you dislike this person, or you're not interested in what they are doing?
I'm not interested in what they are doing.
Okay.
It is the least interesting.
It's not a Mace Windu.
Really?
This is not a Mace Windu where I'm like, I love that I hate him. I just...
The only one who's doing his job? Okay.
Literally don't care. Yeah, like, that's the point of the character, right? With this character, I was not invested in any way, shape, or form. And maybe, and no, I won't even say maybe. I think that's the fault of Koru and the Traveler being characters that had more clearly defined arcs in my view. And so if the payoff at the end with the witch had something more to maybe do with them and not be completely centered around the Ronin, we're having a different conversation, but I just felt hollow at that end when I feel like I was supposed to be very emotional. Yeah.
So you didn't get the fact, like, all of these characters are focused on the Ronin. Like, they're all associated with him and tied to him in very specific ways. Did we get that? Did we see all that?
I saw that they were trying to write it that way. I didn't see the actual execution of that beyond the Traveler and Koru.
No. Okay.
And Koru, because of the duel, not necessarily because of what was done within the text itself.
Oh, man, that's the whole... Okay.
I think with the Ronin, we're supposed to like him to some extent through his struggle. We all have our struggles in choosing right and wrong. And, you know, it's a daily choice that we have to make. And I feel like he was trying to choose the right in the end, although... I think he also felt like it was too late. Maybe it was.
Mm.
But we're supposed to be able to relate to him.
That's the question.
And I was about to get to that. I was like, I did not. I didn't. I was much more interested in, as far as I was interested in the other characters. And he is the title character. So I kept... I just kept trying to figure him out, I guess. I don't know.
Simply because he's the title character, I don't think should necessarily mean we're supposed to be in his shoes. But rather, we go along with them along the journey. I'm trying to think of the movie that this came up in. Jeez. Christian Bale was in a movie with Mark Wahlberg maybe 15 years ago. This is going to be really obscure, so give me a minute to like figure it out in my brain. And imdb.com, not sponsored, but we take it. It's not The Wrestler, because that's Mickey Rourke. What's the other one? The Fighter. where Mark Wahlberg plays the title character of the fighter, but Christian Bale plays his brother and manager. It's kind of like the supporting actor in the role. But the film is about the two of them, and their among other things, the two of them, their relationship. But really, the supporting character, Christian Bale's character, is the dynamic character. And so he's the crazy one. He's the wild one. He's the character you're actually watching. But then what we're supposed to do is understand the impact he has on Mark Wahlberg's character as the main character, and therefore on us as the audience. Like, we are put in his shoes. Like, well, not in his shoes, because that's the argument I'm making, is we're not supposed to be the Ronin, but we're supposed to be alongside him, and these characters are acting at us as well. So I feel like the Ronin is written in a way where he is accessible, and yet he is not. Like, there's that weird dichotomy of he's never named, which makes him immediately distant from us, but also gives us the opportunity to sit with him as ourselves. Like, it's harder to associate with Anakin because he is the chosen one, and none of us are chosen ones or chosen's one. It's easier for us to sit with Luke because he's a nobody. He was from nowhere. You know, he's on the planet. You know, if there was a bright center to the galaxy, he's on the planet that's farthest from.
Hey, who among nobody us has from nowhere. Up there?
Well, pretty much, yeah. Unless you're from Jakku, which is pretty much nowhere.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a different story, because even that turned out to be different. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that. Ugh.
Why do I have
to bring that up? I don't want to think about episode 9 anymore, Brandon, okay?
Hey. I had to think about this book. You have to think about episode 9.
Yeah, but Lindsay won't stop talking about episode 9, and it's just hard enough, really.
That's fair. Yeah.
What was your favorite character?
Oh, definitely the Traveler.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amanda, did you have a different character that you really enjoyed?
I like Kuru. I thought her story was interesting. She had her moment to shine at the end that I thought...
Oh.
Brought her
up. Last man standing kind of thing. So good.
And when she lets go.
Oh,
I loved her letting go.
Yeah. That moment was pretty cool. I will.
Aha! A positive.
No, like, here's the thing with this book, right? It was very much not for me. That said, I think it's pretty clear in the way that the Star Wars terms or terminology is used so freely, and the way that the story is written and executed, that Emma Candon got to do what they wanted to do with this book. And so they should have zero regrets. My opinion aside, obviously, like, it doesn't matter. They got to tell the story that they wanted to tell. It's George with A New Hope. Like, it's the George with the prequels. It didn't matter whether it was successful or not. There was a story that he wanted to tell, and he told it. And if everybody else liked it, cool. If everybody else didn't, I'm not losing sleep over it. He's not losing sleep over it. You know, like, so I don't want this to come off as like they shouldn't be proud of the story that they wrote. They have anything to regret about what they did in writing this book, because it's very clear that they did what they wanted to do with this book. And I think that's commendable, and I think that's respectable. And I think not breaking under the weight of Star Wars and its history and every, you know, how those terms have been used is something commendable. I think for me as a reader, as somebody who primarily reads Star Wars, because, oh my God, they're coming out with a lot of stuff and I don't have that much time. But
they need to slow it down.
Right. But don't.
And I'm not one to say that.
But for, you know, somebody who spends so much time in this galaxy to be put into that same galaxy, but it's a different galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't work, right? This had the potential, as did Visions, and this is something that, like, kind of, I don't even want to say irks me, because that makes it seem like I'm negative on it, but something I feel like Visions didn't go far enough or didn't execute well enough, rather, is the what if scenario, right? Like, that's what the direction that I wanted these stories to go was, a more of a Star Wars what if. So if you look at like the Marvel what if stuff,
interesting.
You have the, you know, Hydra, you have S.H.I.E.L.D., or you have Thor, you have Captain America, whatever it may be, you have enough of a foundation that stays the same with those where you can get on board pretty quickly with these characters. So I'll take the Marvel what if with Peggy Carter becoming Captain Carter, okay? amazing work. Very different from, you know, the dynamic that you had in the movies, everything like that. Like, I really enjoyed that, both of those things. But the Captain Carter stuff had enough grounding in what we already know to where I didn't feel like I was drowning as we were going into this new world. Yeah, I could focus on the characters. I could focus on the story that they were telling. Now, with Ronin and with Visions overall, did they need to do a what if, like, oh my goodness, let's do an anime version of like what happens if Luke turns to the dark side at the end of Return of the Jedi? No. But you have to have that grounding if you're going to write a story in the same world that's already been built for almost 50 years now. It's like going into Lord of the Rings and completely like changing Lord of the Rings, but just happening to use Gandalf's name.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes the book hard to talk about too, for me, is I don't necessarily have a lot of critique because I spent most of the time being so confused. So it's hard to really dig in there and talk about it when the overall feeling was confused.
Interesting. I mean, it sounds to me like you both need to go back and reread it again.
Honestly. Yes,
I did. Well, I sort of did. And I even went back to watch.
I'll come and read it to you as a bedtime story, Brandon.
I honestly, if I were to revisit this, I would revisit it in the audiobook format.
That's not a bad idea. I wonder if that would make a difference. Because
it does.
I thought about that today as I closed the book.
So I...
For the second time.
I got about 100 pages into this book, realized I had no idea what was going on. So I went back to like page 40, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yes. And it was a hectic time in my life while I was reading those 60 pages.
Yes,
so
it was.
I figured, okay, you know, my brain's busy doing other things. So that's not a knock on the book in that aspect. But so I went back, and on the reread, things made more sense. But then I was also falling so far behind on reading. I was like, all right, cool. I'm gonna pick this up from the library on audiobook and listen to it. And I did listen to part of it in the audiobook, and the distinction between the characters is much clearer once you have the voices.
Really?
It really...
That's amazing, because it's written so different. Like, each chapter is told from a different character's perspective, and the writing style is so different, and the way in which they think, like, their brains work, is so different from one another. You could read a chapter, and if you didn't know who it was... Like, if you didn't read the first, like, page of a chapter and just turned to, like, the seventh page of a chapter, you can tell who it is because of the style of the writing. You know, you get to know what Ronan thinks like. You get to know how Koru talks to herself. You get to know what the Traveler's stories. Did you not enjoy when the Traveler went into, like, performance mode and, like, was telling these bardic tales of inspiration and
That's
whatnot?
That's fair. Those were cool.
They were.
Those were so amazing. I love that. I love that stuff. It's so good. I think my favorite moment is, since, you know, I'm just going to take the mic and run with it.
Go for it.
The moment towards the end when the Traveler, the Fox, has to confess that he has the missing piece of the mirror, like, and only by restoring the missing piece of the mirror will it activate, and they can actually solve whatever the riddle is. They don't even know what's going on. Well, the Traveler knows everything that's going on, let's be clear. But it's housed within his lightsaber. but he admits he doesn't have the expertise at lightsaber construction in order to disassemble it without breaking it. And so the Traveler and the Ronin sit together and they take it apart, like it floats between them, and they take it apart piece by piece. And I copied this down. It says they took it apart piece by piece, unwound the dark leather strip and the metal shards of ornamentation, released the wooden pegs that kept the sides of the hilt secured together, twisted, flicked, and parted the Durasteel core with care for the blade's age and artistry. It would have been so much easier to simply break the thing, to burn it, as the Ronin had burned so many others. But it was beautiful, a true relic of the age when the Jedi clans first swore themselves to serve none but the will of their lords, who were themselves the will of the people. An age when they served more than Empire. It's just like, that's so amazing. Like, and it goes on and on and on. I copied the whole paragraph down. It's so good. It's just like, those descriptions of the lightsaber aren't used anywhere else in the text. So when I talk about like the economy of the language, which is not usual for me to really enjoy, I love a good in-depth description thing. Like when you use one word, when you could use 10, you should use 10. But this is written in such a way where every word matters because you're not going to get it again. Like that's what makes the seasons interesting. That's what makes the description of the lightsaber so impactful, because we never knew exactly what it was like. Just like the reveal of the connection between Ronan and Mirari at the end is one sentence, and it's not about that connection at all. Where he said, the text says, he gave the lightsaber to his daughter. And it's like, wait a minute. That's new information.
Well, like, they said it in the mirror. He saw her features as a melding between the two.
Yes, which exactly.
Which is very beautiful. Very beautiful.
It's amazing. But to have it like, he doesn't even know he had a daughter. Like, so he doesn't understand what he's looking at. Like, he thinks it's some crazy poisonous thing, but it turns out it's himself in her. Like, holy moly. That whole ending just hit me like a ton of bricks. It's just so wild and good.
Fair points. Still confused.
Oh, come on, don't. It's okay to be confused. Like, it's not a bad thing to be like, I don't understand.
Oh.
Because when the author doesn't spend time on a thing, that should tell you it doesn't matter. Like, it's
my
okay
favorite
to not
stories.
Understand.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
My favorite stories are the ones that lay it out piece by piece, like Shawshank Redemption, something like that.
Oh,
where
wow, okay.
It all comes together in the end. That is absolutely my favorite storytelling. But I never felt that coming together in this book, at least until it was too late.
Yeah, that is opinions of the man. Definitely different. It's written wildly different.
Of course.
But see, here's my question, Drew. Is you just said if an author doesn't spend a lot of time on something, it tells you it's not important. Right after saying that the author doesn't spend time on basically the biggest reveal.
No, two different things. Two different things. Maybe I didn't explain it clearly enough. Because we don't know really what the Empire looks like. We don't even really know what the planets outside of the three that we visit, we don't really know what's going on in the galaxy. We're not given a zoomed out 30,000 foot view of what's going on, because it's not important to the story. The story is about like these 4, 5, 6 people, right? So it's not important to fully understand, you know, the hierarchical organization of the Jedi Order and where it fell apart and what they're actually up to. It doesn't matter. It's not important to what these characters are actually dealing with. What is important are the moments of description in a sense that it provides us information we didn't have before. So the information we get is critical, but when we're not given more information behind that info, that's what's not important, I would say. Like, it's important to understand the family connection at the end, but we don't need to know. I'm not even sure what you'd say you don't need to know, because you don't need to know more than what's given to you, right? We don't need to know. Here we go. We don't need to know exactly how the mirror works, where it came from, or what it does, right? We just need to know it's a tool of power and that it can do crazy things. beyond that, it doesn't matter what the mirror does.
But I want to know.
That's not the point of the story, though.
But
the point of the story is the people and how they're relating and what they're doing and how they're dealing with these issues among one another. Their trauma, their hangups, their betrayal. Everyone betrays everybody in the story. It's so cool. And it's like, how do they reconcile all of these differences and whatnot? Right. So
here's my... I get what you're saying there. That makes a lot more sense. So thank you for clarifying on that. My rebuttal to that would be the Mirror Verset, right? In Harry Potter...
Hang on. I gotta completely shift gears. Hang on. Okay, go.
All right. With the Mirror of Erised, you don't spend a lot of time explaining what it does or how it works, right? Dumbledore
Okay. Yeah, they say it out loud. It's called the Mirror of Desire, for crying out loud.
Right. That's my point. He says it in a line, and it's not that I need a whole long explanation, but if you're going to set something up, you need to pay it off. At least need to have some way to have a conversation about how it gets paid off. So to bring it back to Star Wars, if you go to Last Jedi, you have Luke. He says, I'm going to teach you three lessons. He teaches her two, because the third lesson is somewhere in that end moment, and people have debated about what that is, right? And the interpretation of what that lesson is that he's giving her there on Crait.
Okay. Yeah, I know you've made that argument before.
Yeah. I didn't get that.
To varying degrees of success.
Fair. I didn't get, anywhere near that where I felt like, okay, I understand what the point of this was, and I understand how... I like knowing how the things function in the stories, because it helps me to... to me, I couldn't grasp the real struggle and trauma that the characters had gone through, because I didn't understand the institutions that had put that trauma on them. That wasn't clear. So I don't want to make it sound like their trauma was invalid or that, it didn't matter. It wasn't clearly defined because the world you were living in isn't clearly defined.
Well, again, but the story is not necessarily about what happened to them. It's what are they going to do about it? Those are two separate issues. I mean, it's if you think about it, It's kind of like the book is a journey of therapy and deprogramming, right? And if you need an analogy, it's kind of like what happens to Agent Callus in Rebels, where we see him in the Empire, and then things occur to him, circumstances and events that occur to Callus, and through those things he changes and adapts through that kind of same concept of therapy and deprogramming. He becomes a different person based on those different things, and it all triggers around genuine emotional connection, right? It's that when Callus and Big Zab. There you go, him. They spend time together, and they recognize the humanity in each other. Can we say humanity, even though he's not a human?
Yeah, okay, we'll go with it.
I don't want to, offend species. Help me out here.
The Lasat.
Lasat.
You're doing great. See. Keep going. We're really proud of you.
Yeah, I remembered Callus existed, right? That's a positive thing. Him and his sideburns, both.
Oh, animation's the best.
We'll talk about Visions.
Callus is my favorite.
There you go. But it's the same kind of thing as we don't need to know where he came from or how he joined the Empire. What we get to do is spend time with him as he deconstructs and tries to re-understand and reorient himself. And
but we get to do that.
That character interesting.
We get to do that because
we do that with all of these guys in Ronin.
No.
Did you miss?
We get that deconstruction because we have the foundation of how terrible the Empire is and the atrocities that it creates the way that it normalizes that for the people who are within it. We understand the dynamic of the Empire. So when you go and he returns to his very drab bedroom and looks at the stone that he got from Callus, or from Zeb, rather, we understand everything in that silent moment because we know of the atrocities of the Empire on a very real level that had been set up to be paid off.
Brandon, you keep stealing my thoughts. We got to stop this.
Yeah. Great minds.
Stop talking. Nah, I don't know. Because that's what the whole duel episode is about. Like the.
Oh, but I rewatched the duel. And so I still didn't see it.
The duel, what the duel does is establish, first, it establishes Koru as a red lightsaber, which we know is a dark side user, like a bad person. And her character bears that out. So there's an association we can confirm there. But the problem in the duel, we get that. That's easy to do, right? But the end of the episode is difficult to do because he confirms to the villagers that he looks no different, yet behaves differently. So he has a red-bladed lightsaber too. So they know what that means, and we know what that's supposed to mean because of what the rest of the episode told us, right? So there's a dissonance in that. It's like, wait a minute, I thought this was bad girl versus good boy, but it's bad girl versus bad boy? Like, it's not clear what makes the two characters different. The next section of the book seeks to kind of identify the differences between those two characters, and when we see that, you know, Koru is kind of corrupted when she is brought back from the dead. Again, spoiler alert. And Ronan, we have to ask these questions. So something equally bad happened to him. Is it possible he died at some point? Not a physical death. We can see that there's no resurrection powers put against him. So it's something equal to that level of trauma. Beyond that, there's a little bit more information about what happens to him we get later on. But beyond that, we ride most of the story knowing only that something terrible happened to him and he's having real difficulty processing it. And that's the journey we go on in this book.
I loved the end of the duel. My mind was spinning, thinking of all the different reasons that he could have a red saber and red kyber crystals and why he was hunting these people down. But then what actually we got disappointed me because just how upended everything was. And I don't know how to fully put into words. I was really excited for the possibilities, and the book did not deliver those to me personally.
Yeah, that's my thing, is the duel was far and above my favorite of the visions.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't remember that from our conversation.
I thought it was the Village Bride.
Oh, yeah, Village Bride exists. My bad. Okay, second favorite.
Wait, you didn't enjoy the twins? I don't understand.
Listen.
Oh.
It's clearly the best episode.
Let's just say, spoiler alert for Book of Boba Fett real quick, but...
Okay.
No, but when...
Did you have like a bad reaction?
When I heard the twins, I was like, please God, the Force,
I can't tell
whatever.
You how much money I would have paid if that was going
to
be what it
it's
was.
It's a repressed memory. It didn't even occur to me.
Oh, so bad.
It's so good. It's so good. Don't you have like Tatooine Rhapsody to go back and listen to or something? Go rock out to that on your MP3 player. Your Zune.
Hey, I was just about to say, I will pull my Zune out right now. All right, so I think we've kind of like, we've kind of come to get a good grasp on like what the book was trying to do and the story that it was trying to tell. And I think, interestingly enough, on a book that's very not much about having sides, we very much have our sides, where for Drew that definitely works of upending everything and telling a different kind of story there. And then it doesn't for myself so
look at like the other books that I love so far, like love out of the new canon are the Padme books, like, which are so wildly different from everything else in the existing books. So, you know, I'm already going to be, if the source material or whatever it is out of left field, I'm all about it.
Yeah, I mean, fair, like, I'm also a huge fan of those Padme books, so.
They're all on my list. Well,
it took everything in me when my girlfriend and I were watching Phantom Menace, and she, like,
oh, no.
Asked about the handmaidens, like, they all kind of, like, look you know, they're all supposed to be like her, whatever. I was like, well, let me explain. I was like, there are two books about this. You don't want to ask those questions. This is your out right now to ask something else, or otherwise you will be here for 45 minutes as I explain the dynamic between... No,
let
those
me tell
are
you
books.
Why Sabe and Erte are the best characters in all of the Star Wars prequels.
Debatable, but
nope. Actually, I couldn't even tell you which one's which anymore. It's been so long since I read that book, and you know me and remembering things is not super great anymore.
I mean,
clearly, I could barely remember the ninth movie's name. Like every time we talk about The Rise of Skywalker, I'm like, the ninth one. It's got a name. I don't know what it is. It's awful.
It's, well, that is not the name of it, but that's what we do to call it.
See, I see what you did. That was a good joke. Yeah. I appreciate that. It gets my approval.
Well, good. I'm glad that I can end with your approval and we can give our final ratings. And since I am, since I was the negative Nancy and I want to let Drew finish on a high note. We do know that my score cannot get any lower because I was at a zero to recap.
But that's not the goal. What's the goal? It's to do better.
I will give it a 1.5.
I'll take
Look at
it.
You showing growth mindset.
I know. I think
it's very unlike him.
It really is.
Well, I didn't, so sneak preview.
Oh.
I think we need to
We could do another 20 minutes. Give me 20 more minutes and I can get you up to a 30.
Well, I can expand on that in a second when it's my turn. I didn't.
I think that there's a lot to be said for the pros. I think there's a lot to be said for like I said, the author doing what they wanted to do with the story and not being afraid to tell their story. So while I do not like the story. I don't enjoy the book, and I won't go back and revisit it because it didn't have anything that I clung to enough to make me want to go back and read it again. Right. So if you take let's take the Alphabet Squadron books, right? Not my favorite.
Okay. Hold on.
Listen.
No, I'm a fan.
Yeah. I know. So I don't want you to
know. Yeah, it's true.
Those are not my kind of books, you know, the fighter pilots and stuff, not usually my jam kind of stuff. But after thinking and sitting with the books and getting a little bit more of the characters, like I had enough in there that I wanted to go back and revisit it. And I'm not rushing back to Alphabet Squadron, but I do want to go back and visit it again and see what other themes and ideas I can pull out of it. This one didn't have that for me. But like I said, this is art. It's all taste, you know. But I don't feel like the story was clear enough. I don't feel like the characters were dynamic enough outside of the Traveler for me to really be invested in again. So I do think there are some solid points in favor of the author, and a ton of respect goes out to anybody who can take the pressure of putting a Star Wars book on their back. That's my rating. So Amanda, I'm going to send it to you.
Okay. So when you first asked me for my rating, I was going to say 2, and I was wishing I had stuck with that. And I think that was my beginning. I really do. Drew, you made good points. They weren't enough to get more than half a point higher. And I think that ending alone got me to that 2.5. I really loved the ending, especially because I did reread it, finished tonight, 30 minutes before getting on. And that made it really fresh.
I've had this book from the
library for at least 2 months now, and whoever's waiting for it probably wants to kill me.
Suckers.
They don't do fines right now, and they made the mistake of telling me that. So I think, again, there was good points. I just wish that I had been able to see them as I was reading, and for whatever reasons, whether it's personal failing or something in the writing, I didn't. And so for that, I'm still at a 2.5.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, I'll allow the going back in time and readjusting of your original score
in order to reflect an increase at the end. I'm going to
part of that's because I can't do math and didn't realize I had picked the halfway point.
So, yeah, that was pretty.
I'm a reading teacher. Come on.
Well, I think that there are. I have only two minor qualms with the book. I think Ekia's character is not my favorite character. She's kind of the she sticks out as a sore thumb to me. She's kind of that neon millennial individual in a story that really doesn't have anything else associated like it. And it's kind of, she stood out and wasn't necessarily my favorite individual in the book. I'm also not a fan of Hanrai's plan. Like it reminds me of Luke's plan for rescuing Han, where it's like 87,000 things have to happen exactly this particular way in order for things to go right. And it did. I felt like his plan of trying to get the girl in the end, I think, or rather using Chie to track down the fox, the traveler, in order to do what? I don't really know. I guess finish the job, which is really what he's supposed to hunt down Mirai and kill her, was his original or their original goal, excuse me. So I don't know what Hanrai's plan really was or anything, but those are, you know, definitely nits to pick. I don't have a lot of room for growth, but if I can love this book more, I'll go from a 4.8 to 4.9 because this one was, I'll admit, this book was written for me. Like, I am the target audience for this book, and there was really, unless it was just a total dumpster fire, there's no way I wasn't going to enjoy it. It's too much right in my wheelhouse. And it was just so good. It's so well written. It was so much fun. I got the advanced copy for the group. Well, rather, I didn't procure it for the group. It was given to me within the group so that I could read it, write a review of it. And I think I devoured the book in 48 hours and agonized over writing a review that had to be held under embargo and couldn't spoil anything in it. I rewrote that stupid thing so many times. But I enjoyed this book so much. I can't wait to, like, I got it as an advanced copy and still bought it when it came out. Like, that's how much I love it. So this is like my favorite book of the new Disney era. And it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I have 9 books in my top 5 right now. So I've got to figure out some pruning. This one's not moving at all. So Brandon, I will make you a deal. If you're willing to entertain.
I will hear it out, but I'm not making any promises.
Years ago, we made a deal that I would do an Attack of the Clones commentary with you for our Patreon supporters once we reach 50 people. I am altering the deal.
Pray I don't alter it any further.
I will do it with you when you reread Ronin, and not a moment before.
Oh, well. All right, well... gonna be a long
come
wait.
On come
gonna
on
be a long wait.
That's how much I enjoy this book, is I am willing to do the work of reviewing my least favorite movie if you will reread your least favorite book.
Your least favorite movie will take you 2.5 hours. My least favorite book will take me another 4 months.
But I'm not gonna be able to sleep because of this dumb thing.
Oh, I'm going to sleep perfectly fine. Thank you. I'm a teacher in 2022. It's sleep is not something I struggle with.
Perpetually tired.
Okay. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Just come inside and fall down.
Okay, well, clearly I didn't, you know, I grossly overestimated the power that bet would have on you. So, okay, whatever.
Yeah. Pray I don't alter the deal any further.
I don't understand what... Well, okay, fine. Forget it. You didn't grow up playing, like, JRPGs and things, did you?
I did not, no.
See, that may be the thing. Is like, I grew up in this stuff, so, like, this was just, like you finally put my Final Fantasy into my Star Wars. Like, what more can I want?
It very much was a you book. Our next book that we'll be covering, Lindsay will be returning and we'll be jumping back into the High Republic with the most recent edition, which is called Fallen Star, which is off to a really good start. Drew
I'm really
is
nervous.
Is gonna, oh, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. So
this is, that's the best kind of hurt.
I don't know. This is going to ruin our tattoo plans for our celebration, I think, Brandon, isn't it?
Ruin them, make them. I don't know.
No.
From a certain point of view.
The whole point was that nothing was supposed to happen to my childhood home of Starlight Beacon, and now it doesn't look good, does it?
I mean,
haven't even opened it yet.
I literally have Kylo Ren on one side of me and Ahsoka on the other, so tragedy and pain is kind of my thing.
But their stories have been told and done, and so they're good, but like my precious little spaceship out there is supposed to live safe and secure forever.
We'll find out.
Okay, stop.
More to come.
Just gotta stop right there.
More to come.
Oh man.
All right, guys. So that is gonna wrap it up for tonight. And of course, you can always follow us over on Twitter at Clashing Sabers. Our Facebook group is Star Wars Clashing Sabers, and then our Instagram Clashing Sabers also. And we will have all of our updates about the fundraiser on all of those platforms. Or like I said, you can go to the show notes or go to go.rallyup.com/Revenge of the Reader and get in on that. And the one thing I did forget to mention is your donation is 100% tax deductible, and that gives Drew more work to do getting all of that stuff ready, because I don't know how that stuff works.
Those letters.
Yeah, you
get
do.
A nice letter from me every year that kind of details fun things, so you can look forward to that, I guess.
See? A little something, a little piece of Clashing Sabers memorabilia to put in your Star Wars room. Congratulations.
Yeah, you can frame it, I guess, and hang it on your wall.
Thumbtacks work too. Drew, if people want to find you and ask you about what's in that letter, where can they find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at TheDrewBrett. It's the best place to find me, or in the Facebook group lurking there and posting pictures of weird things I've found Star Wars related. And I did get my copy of The Fallen Star. By the time people hear this, they'll have been like, he got it days ago, but it was supposed to come on Friday, but then it came Thursday, but it was supposed to be here on Thursday originally. They pushed it back a day. So mail services are really great right now. Everything's going super smooth, and everyone's doing a really good job. So, yeah. Thank your local postal worker for all that they have to deal with, because God knows I wouldn't do it.
No, not at all.
All right.
Amanda, if people want to connect with you and find you, where can they do that?
Oh, goodness. That's a good question. I don't even remember my Twitter handle. I lurk. I'm a big lurker. Yeah. So
I guess we have to go take her class at school, do we?
Yeah, there you go. I like to participate in the groups that I'm in, so both Twitter and Facebook with Clashing Sabers.
Cool, cool. And we look forward to talking more books and talking more Star Wars and getting into the High Republic next. But until then, keep reading, keep writing, but whatever you do, don't burn the sacred text. All right, by this point, you know how this goes. Their stuff, our stuff, not associated with Lucasfilm. Kathleen Kennedy, give me a call. Dave Filoni, I'm there if you need me. Our thoughts? They're our thoughts. They don't reflect Lucasfilm or anybody else associated with this stuff. So, if you don't like it, we're sorry. If you do like it, great. Let us know either way on iTunes, on whatever podcatcher you're listening to us on. Rate us, review us, share us, tell your friends about us, and dadgummit, whatever you do, just don't burn the sacred text.